Hi, this is Thursday, September 23rd. I'm in the office of Barbara Forrest, who is now in Ag Econ. She was formerly the administrator in industrial relations, and I'm here for an interview with her for the oral history project I'm doing. Anyway, the documents that were important in your period were one, that report done for Crawford, which tried to sort of rank the relative importance or reputation of different units. And IR came out very low, as did other interdisciplinary programs. Why? Because they felt they were, you know, maybe shouldn't be here. Then we had to respond to some other strategic plan.
Did we go through a review? You know how the College of Letters and Science mandates a 10-year review?
Yeah. I don't remember that. Maybe that happened. But then I think an effort was made to get tenure granting status again in about 95.
That was right when I left.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it would have been useful to look at the documents, but here what we want to do is probe your memory, actually.
Right.
And see how much you can dredge up. And it might be that maybe Charlotte will come back and ask you some more questions, maybe bring in some things for you to look at.
Sure, yeah, I'd like to look at those documents, because I...
Yeah, you were involved in putting them together.
Yeah, and I can't remember too much about that ranking document, but now that you mention it, I remember that it was kind of a big crisis.
Yeah, that's right. We had various meetings. And so,
yeah. I remember my time at the Institute as one where I really felt that it was kind of a sinking ship.
Mm-hmm.
Is that machine working?
Yes, it is. I'm just checking the number.
Oh, okay.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What happened to me as soon as I started working there was Sally Probasco had just left. She was a real rock in that office and beloved by the students. She had been very good at student placement. She had a lot of good contacts with recruiters, corporate recruiters, and she was very interested in that area. I remember finding a box of business cards of people that she had been in touch with, and she kept very careful notes about every time the person she'd have contact with that person, etc. And I was very impressed by that, because by the time I got there, there were not many companies who were recruiting our students. I had thought, I didn't know much about the Institute when I started working there. I had thought it was more on the kind of labor side of things. Didn't realize that it had evolved into a program to train students in to become human resources practitioners. And so I wasn't very prepared to take on the responsibilities for schmoozing with corporate recruiters. About my second day in the office, a student named Bill, Bill Steinke came into my office and said, "You've got big shoes to fill." Sally Probasco, he said, "The president of IBM thinks the world of Sally Probasco, and I don't think you're going to be able to live up to it." So that was a warm welcome, and I, at that point, didn't even know what my duties were, because there was no overlap between Sally and me. I did talk to her on the phone once, and I said, "Look, they've cut this position down to 80%, and what do you think of that?" I was trying to decide whether to take the job. And she said, "Well," very bluntly, "well, placement will suffer because of this." And I didn't really understand the full implication of what she was talking about. So, unbeknownst to me, the students that fall had a meeting with Dick Miller in which they outlined a number of complaints. And I was very gratified to read the history to see that this is a long tradition in the Industrial Relations Institute. I thought it was just me. So I realized that there was this tradition of activism and students wanting to change the way the Institute operated. Anyway, they had a big meeting with Bill Dick, and he never told me about it. And among their complaints at that time were complaints about me. What is Barbara going to do about placement? We want Barbara to do more with placement. And at that time, I didn't even know that I was supposed to have anything to do with placement until a guy from Exxon called me up on the phone, and he said, where is Sally? And I said, she's gone. And he said, okay, well, then you and I are going to have dinner, and we're going to talk about placement. And I thought, I don't know if I want to go eat dinner with somebody from Exxon.
Yeah.
But I did, and we had a conversation, and his reason for eating dinner with me was to tell me that Exxon was displeased with the way the students were being taught, that we weren't doing enough in the program to teach them what they needed to go into the corporate world. And what were we going to do about that? He was a little bit pugnacious, and I didn't really know what to say to him, so I just took notes. But I thought it was kind of inappropriate for a guy from a big multinational corporation to be telling us how to teach our students. So that was one of my first experiences on the job. Later that spring, the students had organized themselves into a major revolt. And they presented a 16-page laundry list of complaints to Dick, in which they complained about various things. And I wish I could see the document, because at the time I thought that the complaints were rather petty and that there wasn't much of substance in there. But the issue about placement was a big deal for them. They were all very worried about getting jobs. I think there were about 50 students in the program at that time. And a good number of them were going out on the job market that year. And because I didn't know what I was doing, I appeared to be a real numbskull. And so I was devastated by that. That happened at the end of my first year. The other thing that happened was all the members of the support staff quit shortly after I started there. Within the first month, the two main people running the office left, Mary Ann Twist and Maggie Brandenburg.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And so there was no one to run the office.
Yeah.
It was me
and
our work-study student, Chris Fegestad.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, fortunately, was highly competent, so she was able to keep, in her 20 hours a week, things running pretty smoothly, and she also comforted me a lot during this period, telling me that I was doing a fine job, and she also gave me some history on what the person in my position had done. So it was really the work-study student who trained me. So that was my first year on the job, and I don't remember much else other than trying to just juggle everything that was coming at me, running the alumni group, dealing with the student association, trying to figure out how to hire new people, train them to do graduate admissions, which I didn't know too much about myself, etc., and then deal with the placement issues.
I remember we had a couple of faculty meetings about the student complaints, and Jim Stern tried to play the intermediary in that.
That's right, yeah.
And I think did a good job of trying to dampen it down.
Yeah, it was really Steinke who organized the whole group.
Yeah.
He was a very unhappy and bitter person.
Yeah.
And I think he went off back to work at IBM.
He did, yes, he
right,
did. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember meeting Joan McRae.
Oh, yes.
Who was the IBM recruiter right. for our institute at that time. And I learned a lot from mm-hmm. her. She was a lovely person
yes, right.
and very supportive of
yeah.
the institute.
Yeah.
And in the years that I was there, IBM, by the time I left, IBM was about the only company going
mm-hmm.
to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of our students were getting jobs by going through the School of Business Career
yeah,
Center.
Right.
Or I guess there were a few companies that were still coming in to take interns.
Mm-hmm.
And then those would often yeah. turn into
jobs, yeah.
full-time positions.
Right.
But
well, and back in 1991, that was a recession.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody was having trouble. And then things began to pick up very strongly, so by 1995 the economy was booming.
Yeah.
And it was easy to get jobs on your own even.
People were getting good jobs,
yeah.
And the same issues were always coming to the front of the table. Minority student recruitment was a big deal. How to fund our students was always a major issue. How to recruit better students, how to keep students from going to the University of Illinois and Cornell instead of accepting our offers. So we had a lot of problems with admissions back
mm-hmm.
then. And we often ended up admitting students who were kind of marginal.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was harder to find jobs for them because they didn't do well in their
mm-hmm.
classes, etc. But interesting that the same issues were plaguing the institute in earlier years. The other issue that was a big one was, should we just turn the institute into an HR
yeah.
program? You know, and people remember. I remember Paula Voos presenting at a faculty meeting. I don't know if you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you were on the committee at that time. A proposal to rename the institute
right.
Industrial Relations and Human Resources.
Yeah.
And a few people spoke in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a few people did not.
Yeah.
We ended up not adopting
yeah.
that
yeah.
idea. But during my time there, David Zondervan, who was on the history faculty, did not get tenure
yeah.
and he left. We had a real problem trying to, well, without tenure granting capability and the economics department not putting any kind of emphasis on this area. It was econ that was the core of the faculty
mm-hmm.
for so many years. We lost Jim Jones, he retired.
Mm-hmm.
So the faculty was just decimated.
Yeah. Right.
There was a woman in the law school named
June Weisberger, Karen Kloffs.
No, not them.
Linda Green?
Not Linda Green. She was on the faculty for a while. She was teaching an affirmative action course, and then she left to go to Yale. I can't remember her name.
Hmm.
She was in the law school just for a few
mm-hmm.
years.
Feynman?
No, not Feynman. I'll think of it tomorrow.
Right. Call me
or later tonight.
Right.
But, or if I had the brochure.
Well, and then Spreck left too, didn't he?
So, yeah, he. Right.
He stayed about 5 years.
He was only here for about 5 years.
Yeah.
And he, at the end, didn't he leave the institute to go 100% into sociology?
I think so, yes. Right.
Yeah?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was always trying to get Paula to. Every year I would scan the newspapers for, you know, who's been hired.
Mm-hmm.
So the history department hired a labor historian.
Right.
And I would try to get Paula to go out to lunch with
mm-hmm.
that person
mm-hmm.
and try to recruit them to teach
right.
a class
mm-hmm.
that we could list on our course
yeah.
list. Jane Collins in rural sociology was doing a lot of work on women
mm-hmm.
in the labor force,
mm-hmm.
still is.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't get her to call up Jane. And,
mm-hmm.
and that was one of the great disappointments of my time there, was
mm-hmm.
that I could not do much to motivate Paula to try
mm-hmm.
to bring people
mm-hmm.
in as sort of not funded faculty,
yeah.
but just affiliated
right. yeah.
faculty,
mm-hmm. right.
whose courses we could list.
Yeah.
I got Dan Bromley to sign on mm-hmm. because he teaches institutional mm-hmm. economics yeah, course here, right. and he advised a few of the IR mm-hmm. students. But otherwise, I wasn't able to do much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, do you think it was personalities in part, or the general atmosphere, or the kind of a change in IR, HR, or the fact the business school was becoming more dominant?
The business school was very yeah. dominant, yeah. I was interested in reading the history that the research methods class was always controversial.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. I always thought it was just Don Schwab's bailiwick,
yeah. Yeah.
something that the students perennially complained mm-hmm. about. And
mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, working on the alumni board, there were a number of alumni on that board who had not completed their degrees, and the one stumbling block, they had done everything but the research methods class, and it scared them so much that they left without finishing a master's mm. degree. Jack...
Ladinsky?
No, there was a student named Jack who works for AFSCME, Council 40, called me up one day and said, I never received my master's degree. I've been out for 18 years. I'd like to finish my master's degree. So he had to get through that research methods class. Somehow we got the university to readmit him.
Mm-hmm.
And he got through the research methods class with Schwab and managed to finish his degree after an mm-hmm. 18-year hiatus.
Yeah.
Another guy is the head of the academic personnel office here at the university.
Steve Lund.
Steve Lund yeah. is also one of those
right.
research methods.
Oh, really?
All but research methods
yeah.
IR graduates. Never finished the degree because of that class.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, so I don't know what the stumbling block was. I think Paula's mind was kind of elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
She later went off to Rutgers
yeah.
shortly thereafter.
And then she was involved with this John Dunlop commission.
Was she?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. I think it was in that period.
In that period.
And, you know, it was a bunch of luminaries, and
right.
she felt very pleased to be on it, and, you know, some kind of labor management.
Ah, right, the Dunlop Commission.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
yeah, she was always jetting off to
yeah.
Washington mm-hmm. to be on that commission. And you and I talked at various times about how to do more fundraising for
mm-hmm.
scholarships.
Yeah.
We did a little bit of work on that through the alumni board. They would have these fundraisers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you went around and raised a lot of money from former directors
yeah.
to make a small scholarship
yeah.
fund,
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
give a student a few thousand
yeah.
dollars
yeah.
a semester. That was,
yeah.
but we never really got that off the ground.
No.
We could
no.
never compete with Illinois.
No, that's right. And then we lost, you know, at one time we had a dozen PA positions,
mm-hmm.
and that was cut back to six probably when I was director, and then gradually phased out.
Those were gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only financial aid we had when I was there was from AFSCME,
mm-hmm.
Council 40. They had two PA ships
yeah. Yeah.
that they were continually threatening to pull
yeah.
because we could never produce a student who was interested in labor.
Yeah.
So I remember Bill Houlihan arranging for me to meet with those people because they were saying, you know, we're going to pull this
mm-hmm.
financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to pay for this anymore. So I met with them, and I sat down, and I didn't know what I was doing,
mm-hmm.
but I thought, well, these are guys who are on the labor side, so I told them that I had once been a member of their union, and that I had gone on strike in one of my first
yeah.
years working at the university,
mm-hmm.
and so they were very impressed by that.
Life.
Right.
Union member.
A real, and I said, look, I'm going to try to find you
right.
some union
yeah.
side people to
yeah.
take these assistantships.
Mm-hmm.
And they went away kind of shaking my hand
yeah.
and saying, okay, good, you know. And later Bill took me aside and he said, you did a great job. The those guys were ready to walk out of here. But you brought them back into the fold. So
wonderful.
That wasn't something that I, that was a little accomplishment. Yeah. And then another accomplishment was I found a kid, a prospective applicant, who was kind of a little open-minded, didn't know what he wanted to do, had kind of a liberal arts education, seemed like an intelligent kid, and came to visit. And I thought, maybe I can get this guy to take a job with Aspen Council 40. And so we recruited him, and I convinced the AFSCME people that they should give this kid a try. And he went off to go, he went off to work for a big union somewhere. But he was a guy who, he was on the fence. He thought, well, maybe I want to be a personnel person, maybe I don't. So that was a little something. That was a little something.
Yeah. How long did you work for Dick as director?
2 years.
2 years.
2 years, yeah. And then it was when I was cleaning out Dick's office. He left and kind of left a bunch of files all over the place. And so I went through them, tried to organize them. That's when I found the notes from the first meeting with the students that fall that Dick hadn't told me about, in which they were laying out all these complaints. And I would have been able to do something about it if I had known at the time. And I was really angry with him. I thought, Dick, you should have told me about this. These students are my problem now. Yeah. So yeah, Dick left after the first 2 years, and then Paula came on.
And then Craig left, but was that while you were there or not?
No, I was gone by the time Craig left. He was being
courted by Illinois.
I think he went there for a year as a visitor and then came back. And then left for good later on. They kept trying to
And upping the ante.
Recruit him. So that in general, I mean, I think the years that I was there were the times when the discussion centered around, you know, should the institute go reside in the business school and just give up being a separate entity, fold in an HR, you know, fold in the institute activities with the HR program in the business school. And some people supported that.
Yeah, and actually an effort was made to negotiate something like that
before
a couple of years ago.
And
the, I think, big stumbling block was that the business school, well, LNS had been paying the business school faculty to teach IR courses. The business school said, well, fine, give us the money, make a permanent transfer from LNS to the business school, and good deal. So LNS says, well, gee, $300,000 or whatever it was, that's, you know, a big hunk of cash to give away forever. So, I mean, there were a lot of complicating factors in all of this, but that was one element there that might have worked. But nobody could quite negotiate the right deal.
Right. So by ending the institute, LNS gets a big chunk of money back.
Well, except that
into its budget.
Except that they had this big cut. You know, this $250 million cut for the university. Well, LNS had to. Madison had to. Sort of, I don't know, 50 or 100 million. And then everybody else had to pick it up. So this was, you know, a timely
part of, the,
part of it.
Yeah.
We can save by just finishing it off. So.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think would have saved the Institute?
Well, you know, there are differing points of view. I can understand a lot of them. One, if we'd gotten tenure granting authority, that might have helped. Although then you're locked in with a certain core of people who, you know, over the years may or may not be. We could always sort of say to people, well, sorry, you can't teach anymore. We're going to have somebody else do it.
Right.
You could kind of deadwood or people less creative, you could kind of push them aside and bring in new people. Mm-hmm. So it gave you that flexibility. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there was nothing to backstop. You can't just abolish a department by fiat. Mm-hmm. And so we, not having departmental status, you know, we had no real standing. Then, you know, decline of unionism, the econ becoming more and more less interested in that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe Bob Lampman, I don't think you knew him, he was in econ and was involved with the Poverty Institute, but he often used to say, well, you know, why should the Poverty Institute continue? Should it continue forever? You know, maybe things should have a sunset. And maybe IRRI served its purposes. You know, from late 40s, really out of World War II, all the labor management negotiation. And, you know, it's an episode in history. So, but, you know, what weight you put on each of these is hard to say. And I think there's always the sentimental attraction of something you've been involved in.
Although I have to say, I don't think I would have wanted it to continue limping along the way it was, or to become a subunit of the business school. That would be a bad way for the Institute to die, especially given its history. You know, it's But what about the other IR programs around the country? Are they all suffering?
I don't know. I talked with Dale Bellman. Did you know him?
I've heard
he was over at Milwaukee, and I think he taught for us now and then. He is at Michigan State now, and he said, you know, they've had some cuts, and probably other places have too, but I don't think it's crippled them. But I really don't know quite how they're doing. There was a guy, Bruce Kaufman, who got a PhD in econ, very active guy, and he wrote a book about 10 years ago describing the history of IR programs. And so I'm thinking maybe for this history, getting him to write a paper that would go in this book
that would be good.
On sort of what's been happening recently in IR programs.
I mean, I get the sense that the Wisconsin program was kind of the last holdout among these programs nationwide, trying to keep an interdisciplinary focus, making students take a few courses in labor, a few courses in international, as opposed to just saying, okay, this is a professional HR program.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah.
And I think that was its real strength. You attracted a different group of students than those who just wanted to get the nuts and bolts of personnel management.
With the theory course. And I don't know who was teaching the theory course after Paula left. Do you know who?
Sam Cohen had left by the time you came along.
Yeah, I don't remember his name.
He was in sociology, and he would teach it.
Oh.
He may have left by the time you arrived. After that...
Yeah, because Paula taught it the whole time that I was there.
I'm not sure who taught it.
Maybe they dropped it.
I doubt it, but...
I think they had grad students teaching it some. Jody Knaus.
Oh, that could be. That could be, sure. Yes, right.
Some of the advanced grad students.
And so anyway, you know, partly it was just aging. The Barbash retires, Castle, Ozan, Stern, et cetera. And then, you know, 10 years later, Glenn Kane, myself, Jim Jones, Sal Levine, and now, Schwab is retired, and Herb, I guess, is close. So anyway, you have this whole cohort of people passing beyond the line, so to speak. And meanwhile, we weren't getting new people in.
No new people in. Especially to teach those core courses. Yeah, I wonder how they help
helped the most recent grads get through their programs?
Well, one thing they did, they cut off recruitment a couple of years ago, and then, so they gave people, in effect, anybody who was here, I think they had 2 years, and now they're all transferred to sociology, which will administer the graduation of the people in the pipeline.
Oh, and the PhD students.
Yeah, and also the MA people who are not quite done. Mm-hmm. And then their IR had some money, let me see.